Fabulous. Thank you. And good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming out on this wintry morning. I'm kind of glad to see winter this year. I'm liking it. So, beloved community and 2012 in review. Big topic to cover in 20 minutes, huh? But at the close of our Gregorian calendar year, I am excited about USG's new mission statement. And if you haven't gotten a hold of it yet, take some time, find it. I'm sure it's online. It's a good read. Now, what's really lovely about this new mission statement is it attempts to codify our intention to create beloved community through our relationships here at USG. I'm sure if we were to sit down at a table asking what these two words, beloved community, mean, we would hear a lot of different definitions. So let's go. Let's try it out. We're going to be talking about this for a long time. There's a UU perspective on seeking beloved community that was written up in this winter's issue of UU World. I don't know how many of you saw that. Hopefully some of you did. Frederick J. Muir, parish minister of the UU Church of Annapolis, Maryland, gives us the benefit of his feeling enriched thought process in his article, The End of the I Church. To build the beloved community, Unitarian Universalism needs a new narrative. Reverend Muir says this, a perfect storm of social changes is taking shape whose effects we are late to recognize and slow to absorb. The U.S. Census Bureau projected in 2009 that members of racial and ethnic minorities will make up a majority of the country's population by 2042. Which means that UUs with a North American look, as reflected in our demographics and theology and epistemology, may grow more cut off from the U.S. population unless we start reflecting our society and the world's true diversity. Muir suggests UUs can sustain Unitarian Universalism for generations. However, he cautions, fundamental to our survival is a paradigm shift that goes deep into UU history and character. It goes to the essence of how we understand ourselves and relate to the world at large. And he further summarizes, we, and he means UUs, are held back by a pervasive and disruptive commitment to individualism. We cling to the notion of UU exceptionalism that is often insulting to others and undermines our good news. Our aversion to authority and power compromise a healthy future. Now, these corrupting narratives shape the dominant story we tell about Unitarian Universalism. Reorienting ourselves will be hard, but profoundly rewarding. And I call this change moving from I Church to beloved community. I agree with Muir's observation that there's little to nothing about an ideology or a theology of individualism that upholds our UU covenant of mutual support and trust. And Muir correctly points out, I think, that we cannot do both covenant and individualism. I think it's critically important to recognize, though, that any UU notion of beloved community presupposes having the astonishing privilege of choice. We are so blessed to have so many choices in our lives. So what happens when we inquire into the privilege of having the power to choose, for example, our shared values? This is one of the hidden in plain sight features by which we might possibly fail to recognize our indebtedness to our ancestors, and by which we may fail to dampen a sense of self-sufficiency. If we are living lives filled with choices, big, small, and free, our sense of self-sufficiency has yet to be inhibited. When we bring individuality rather than individualism to covenant, we seed a beloved community where, through choosing inclusivity and respect for all people, places, and things, We experience the growth and fulfillment of spiritual roots bound by the deep, rich soil of empathy, compassion, and love. Okay, I'm done. Thanks for coming. Just kidding. USG is a congregation that is doing beloved community right, yes? We've got beloved community here, right? Good for us. Now, is that enough? Why should we think about beloved community outside of our really cool church? Because we have the privilege of choice, we can afford to ask which of our choices collectively, inside and outside of our church walls, betray beloved community here or anywhere. And as with the process of sculpting, grappling with negative space can be part of revealing form. Now, many of us here today might agree that as an institution making choices for us, our nation is struggling to be in the world as a peaceful people. I think we're weary of war. Yes? Raise your hand if you're weary of war. Okay. And some of us are ready for the politically induced state of fear, which has gripped our country since 9/11, to come to an end. Raise your hand if you're done with the fear. Okay. So we know that our creative power is meant to meet our human needs. And we know that war in any form is a betrayal of our best human impulse, which I think is empathy. So we know, you know, that Jung says that war is the welling up of, you know, unexpressed, unresolved aggression simmering in the collective unconscious. And we know that wherever we see, we observe, we experience physical or emotional violence, war is being waged, whether that's in our homes, in our schools, on our streets, or in ourselves. So what do we do? What do we do? What do we do when we continue to craft identities where we're making some kind of war, where we're being hammers and nails? You know what I mean when I say we're being hammers and nails? It's complicated. I have a whole bunch of stuff here I'm not going to read. I don't know where I'm going to go with this. I think I'm going to go here. Because we know a lot. We have developed a really unique faith community. We have put aside, I think I would say, my experience of this congregation is an enormous commitment to letting go of living out a role of either a hammer or a nail. Do you know how revolutionary that is? That's extraordinary, because most of the people around us are either still pounding away on the nails, and the nails are still going, please stop. So we're way ahead of the game in what we know and understand and seek and find in each other in beloved community. This has been a tough year. This has been a tough year, and it's been coming thick and fast and hard. And I am so looking forward to going to my granddaughter's 9th birthday celebration today without hearing of one more betrayal of beloved community anywhere in the world. I'm hoping for one afternoon where I can enjoy the peace that I carry personally most of the time. So in the last 364 days, you know, if you were around and hearing what was going on, we know that we were touched by the slaying of Trayvon Martin in Florida, mass shooting at a movie theater in suburban Colorado, the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. Who would have thought? Wow. we struggled and worked against very actively here against a thinly veiled attempt at voter suppression here in Pennsylvania. Thank you, Jill, Scott, Mary. Thank you both for being enormously helpful in that regard. We understood without any sugarcoating that our electoral process is now for sale. Okay? Then we had an assassination attempt on a girl on a school bus in Afghanistan. And then we had 20 beautiful souls snatched away with their teachers, all women and children, Sandy Hook Elementary School. And we've got soldiers who are returning home from our wars on terror who are making war on themselves. And they're ending their lives at the rate of one per day. One per day. Now, while our attention has been drawn scattershot to these horrific circumstances, and they are horrific, more than 600 murders took place in the city of Chicago this year, and Philadelphia's murder statistics are not far behind. On the other hand, we are a generation dazzled by scientific verification of the Higgs boson particle. I don't know about you, but I'm thrilled to pieces about that. We're also the generation that has ignored 30 years of warnings about the consequences of global warming. Hundreds of us in our national community had their lives changed by a single dose of a contaminated medical product, but we also have our genetic sequence available to be mapped, so we can have boutique interventions. Okay. I personally was impacted by the Harvard study of 2012. How many of you know about the Harvard study of 2012? Okay, I can share this with you. So, the Harvard study of 2012 connected pesticides with colony collapse disorders, and that's the thing that's killing all the bees. Now, the beekeepers knew this, but nobody wanted to hear what the beekeepers knew. It had to be, you know, official and scientific. Okay, so now it is. So we need to be clear that in poisoning our land, we're poisoning the pollinators of every third bite we eat. And while only some of us are poisoning everybody's food supply, what are the rest of us doing about this collectively? This is where UUs have enormous power, because this is where we can kind of say, well, that fits in with beloved community, that idea, and we can figure out whether we're here or not, that we're going to participate in changing that picture. November, the American Academy of Pediatrics released a policy statement about the link between children's exposure to pesticides in the home, neurological deficits, and higher rates of childhood leukemia. So we're poisoning our children, too. And what are we doing about this on a policy level? I think poisoning our children with our food is like a betrayal of the beloved community. I think we can figure out another way. And now we got the NRA thinking the answer to the gun massacres is guns in the schools in the hands of armed guards. And that Congress should put this legislation in place in January. And that we should pay the cost of $80,000 per school per year for this kind of protection, while the gun industry raking in $6 billion a year contributes what? I don't know. So the unspeakable horror of 20 children being slaughtered is unbearable. But we can consider that it's also unbearable that millions of our children who are being poisoned by the chemicals in the food we buy for them to eat will also die from seemingly disconnected disease onset. This past Friday, a young woman succumbed from injuries suffered during a really brutal assault in Delhi, India. And as of yesterday, thousands of protesters were pouring into the streets of Delhi demanding justice. Changes in the law, old and young women alike. We're not going to live like this anymore. Choice. So we can ask ourselves what's going on. How many of you have been asking yourself, what is going on? What is going on? And we can't say with any certainty what is happening with our various cultures, and we're not quite to the place where we may fully trust our inner knowing. So if you feel overwhelmed by the amount and frequency of these assaults on your psyche, you may not be feeling safe, and you sure aren't alone. We've got a lot of company. Sometimes this year has been a really hard year on so many levels. I think everybody's going through something, and I've often thought it would be simpler to just give up and yield to the oppression of the constant barrage of fear triggers in our daily lives than to engage my own internal beloved community, where I had a new insight this year about turning the other cheek. I used to think that the concept of turning the other cheek was like so lame. It's like, why would you do that? But this year I had the insight that if you turn the other cheek, is there a faster way for you to see something you hadn't been seeing a moment before? Boom. Who knows what's over there? It's a really cool thing to play with. So up to now, we've lifted ourselves up through humanity, through the hammers and nails. Some of us are the hammers, some of us are the nails. But what we keep doing is we keep reinforcing the invisible structure that we are living inside of. I don't want to live in that structure. And I think that really being intent, having a really clear intent about creating beloved community means we don't have to. Now, Martin Luther King Jr.'s definition of beloved community is now a guide for UUs in our intellectual rigor and social justice actions among those lacking privilege of choice. So here's what he had to say about beloved community. Our goal is to create a beloved community, and this will require a qualitative change in our souls as well as a quantitative change in our lives. And Reverend King identified the changes that we might want to try out. He said, our loyalties must transcend our race, our tribe, our class, and our nation. We are tied together in a single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. And then he said this, whether we realize it or not, each of us lives eternally in the red. And recognition of one's indebtedness to past generations should inhibit our sense of self-sufficiency. That's a good thing. And promote awareness that personal growth cannot take place apart from meaningful relationships with other persons. That's a little vague. So I'm going to unpack the phrase relationship with other persons. I think what he wanted to say, and maybe it was already not safe what he was talking about, was that how are we going to have really rich personal growth apart from meaningful relationships with people who are not like us, people who may not even share our values? That's hard. And maybe spiritual growth can't take place apart from embracing relationships which challenge our loyalties to a nation or any institution that is really in the end going to undermine our fulfillment of personal and spiritual growth. So we know like attracts like, and we're comfortable with people who are like us. I don't know if that's true for me. So it's understandable then when we gather here at USG seeking refuge when our hearts are broken, it's natural that we gather here to try to apply a balm to the wounds of modernity. And it is righteous that we share our sorrows and our joys, trusting in that. In doing that, we sustain the intangible touchstone of connection, which rests securely on the foundation of our seven principles. How lucky are we in that? We're really, really lucky and blessed to have that foundation. And we are nurtured when we gather here to recommit to our covenant of mutual trust, support, and let's not leave out celebration. It's a good thing. So it's been said that we gather as UUs throughout the world to make the world a better place. But I don't know if this honorable intention energizes our understanding of the beloved community. So, in the in-between moments, are we upholding our relationships while we're hanging on to our traditional spiritual and ethical practices and finding a way to be welcoming in relationships that penetrate our vulnerabilities? Who knows what that is for you? But it's worth thinking about. Could be anything. Doesn't have to be just race, gender, tribe. Who knows what that means for you? So, I think one of the things that beloved community offers is the opportunity to be accountable for the work we have yet to do, not to make the world a better place, but to make a better place in ourselves with which we meet the world and everyone in it. So I think that we can feel secure in our sense of inherent value that we get here in our faith tradition, and that we can relax into other perspectives here in our midst, anywhere else. And we can approach collaboration and problem solving in a really unique way. A really unique way. Because we're committed to, you know, just being open. So, when we step across the threshold into, into that covenant with beloved community, I think we willingly take up the changes that Reverend King suggests. And I'm really enormously touched by the continual process of stepping up again and again and again that happens here. But I also want to say, I think women have got to think about their role in beloved community. I want to make sure we're not chasing power, we're not chasing masculine power, and that we inadvertently make choices that are not life-affirming. So I think that events in 2012 presented countless opportunities to seek beloved community. And I think we're being asked because we have choice here, whether we're going to choose love or fear, because we're in a privileged position. And I think this is one of the most beautiful unifying elements of our congregation. We have the privilege of choice. So I got to tell you, I love discovering these new questions and seeking the resonant answers that I know we will find here. And I'm so grateful to be making my qualitative and quantitative changes with you in my circle of well-being. You may not know what those changes are, but I do. And I don't think I could be doing them without you. And I want to thank everyone here who I have spoken to recently, who was part of, you know, helping me think through some ideas about what beloved community means. And we're just starting to think about it. So remember the farmer of our story? Well, he might not have been well-liked. He might not have been well-understood. And that's not important. Perhaps he didn't engage in his community in obvious ways, but he experienced acceptance, and because of that, he chose to set his fields on fire to save his neighbor. The villagers were saved because, despite his shy, incomprehensible ways, they had accepted the farmer as a member of their community, and they were willing to save him and everything that was dear to him. So here's my prayer for 2013, that we experience growth without needing loss or tragedy to inspire new choices. That we may all, sitting here today, transcend any role that we may have played as a hammer or a nail. And that as a congregation and community, we find better tools to build something new and unknown. We locate the best selves with which we meet the world and everyone in it. And we challenge each other, we celebrate each other, we save each other, and we have an opportunity to take that consciousness and go forth and just share it. Just share it. I hope you all really understand how valuable you are in that process. So I wish you a joyous Kwanzaa, 151st watch night if you celebrate that, and a peaceful new year.